last official event of this conference. It will be a panel discussion with Juan Carrasquilla, Roman Oros, and Simone Montangelo. And we will start with a short presentation by each of these people, and then follow up with questions. If you have questions, please use the raised hand feature or the chat function, and I will try to squeeze them in between the speakers. Okay, Juan, please start.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so just wanted to flash you a few slides with applications of tensor networks in machine learning. I think this is an exciting area, and there may be a lot of progress to be held in this area. So let me tell you quickly what machine learning is. It's just a set of algorithms and statistical models that computers use to perform tasks without explicit instructions, which is usually what we do in when we code. So this is a kind of like a different mentality about how you solve problems using data. And machine learning impacts right now a lot of aspects of our life, like web search, virtual personal assistants, traffic predictions, face recognition, recommendation systems, email, and translation, and a lot more. So it's an important topic right now, and there's a lot of potential for tensor networks in the area. I just want to highlight a few of these aspects, but before that, let me tell you what are these algorithms, or what broad categories of algorithms. So first, there's supervised learning, which we are familiar maybe. So one example of it is the regression task, where, for instance, you fit a polynomial to some data that you have. But there's also classification, where you have data accompanied by labels. For instance, you have an image of a digit, and so you can supplement this image with a label of the corresponding to the digit it has. And so you can try, say, for instance, do predictions on what some categories of the image or what it looks like. So for instance, if you have an image of a cat or an image of a dog, then you can try, for instance, train a computer algorithm to recognize whether the image is a cat or a dog. It's a related one, a related family. It's called semi-supervised learning, where like you try to do classification, where you have a data set that is either whose labels are partially absent, or you have noisy labels, so where you're not 100% sure that like what's in the image you're trying to classify, for instance. There's also an interesting category. It's called unsupervised learning, where, for instance, tasks in this category are, for instance, probability distribution estimation. So if you're given a big bunch of data sets in a high dimensional space, you can try to estimate the probability of the underlying probability distribution of the data. You can use unsupervised learning to, say, sample similar but somehow related data points. This clustering, where you have a big bunch of data, and then the data, you can try to, say, for instance, cluster the data in different categories if there are. And then there's reinforcement learning, which is used, for instance, for controlling complex systems like robots. You can use it for automatic gameplay, like as you've probably seen, there's some computers that can beat you at chess, and more recently at Go game. You can use reinforcement learning for automatic neural architecture search. You can use it for planning, scheduling. So it's very general. So those are families of machine learning algorithms where you could apply all these techniques, including tensor networks. So what are why do we expect tensor networks work for machine learning? It's basically because there are a set of commonalities between machine learning problems and physical problems that you've heard of during the last week in the conference. So one is the high dimensionality. So Hilbert spaces are exponentially big, and but also these problems in machine learning are very high dimensional. So for instance, if you take a language model, it is defined over a very high dimensional space, like the size of, for instance, the vocabulary, which is, say, I don't know, 8,000 words, to the size of the sentences that you have. So it's very high dimensions. There's symmetries that are common to physics and machine learning, for instance, translational symmetry, rotational symmetry, even gauge symmetry in some systems are useful for machine learning. And so symmetries at the same time enrich our understanding of physical systems, but also alleviate the sample complexity of these learning algorithms or these machine learning tasks. There's also similarities in the correlation functions. So for instance, there's critical correlations in natural images, in natural language, in music, and speech, which are similar to, for instance, critical systems in physics. And there's overall some common structure that makes me hopeful that tensor networks can be really useful for machine learning. So here are a couple of examples like of tensor networks applied to machine learning problems. So the first one was around 2016 by Miles Stuhlmeier, who was a postdoc at Perimeter back then. So he started using, say, matrix product states to perform classification. So for instance, given an image of a cat, then you could classify it into the cat images. And so he used kind of like a way of encoding the data with a nonlinear feature that he defined. So which means that he creates effectively a product state, and then he contracts that product state with an MPS, matrix product state. And then that gives you the classification of the image, and he uses a DMRG style optimization of the MPS, and so he demonstrated, I think, for the first time that tensor networks could be really helpful for this type of tasks. There's a lot of new work in this area. Like, so this was extended, for instance, to PEPs and other tensor networks, which achieve accuracy is comparable with state-of-the-art machine learning algorithms, although they're computationally very expensive and tricky to optimize. But nevertheless, there's a lot of hope also in this area of supervised learning. So one that I'm excited about is the anomaly detection, which is the task of determining whether a data point comes from the same distribution that the data that you had to train the model. And so there's, I want to highlight this paper, Anomaly Detection with Tensor Networks from X, where what they do is they map the data into a sphere, and then they project this using basically an MPO into another sphere. And then this, what's exciting about this is the first instance of a tensor network exceeding classic and deep learning methods, which is very exciting for me. So it's in this paper here from X in June, I think, or July. This one is learning quantum channels. So this is closer to the quantum information tasks, but in this paper, we are able to perform reconstructions of large quantum channels using machine learning ideas and tensor networks. So that's another application. There's also unsupervised learning, which is very exciting, which is where what you're trying to do is you model the probability distribution given some data. And so this is called Bohr machine because people use an MPS and the probability distribution associated when you take the square of it. And so they use these models to say estimate probability distributions. And you can also use this for anomaly detection and so on. So here's the landscape of say generative models in general that I wanted to bring here is this algorithmic flexibility on the Y and expressive power. And so this, if you want, in blue here is the traditional machine learning models. In here down, very expressive are like traditional deep learning. So modern deep learning architectures, they're very expressive, but you cannot do a lot. So there's not a lot of algorithmic flexibility or possible queries you can do. And what I want to highlight is this MPS Bohr machine is very flexible, right? Like this matrix product states allow you for significant algorithmic flexibility while retaining expressive power. So there's a lot of interesting problems that you can tackle with the MPS. So it's not just about the fact that they're very expressive, but also the fact that you can compute, for instance, all marginals and so on. And so I see a lot of potential here. So these models, or in particular the MPS, are very expressive, and they allow you to perform very complex queries untractable inference tasks. Whereas modern machine learning techniques are very expressive, but they're very hard to manipulate algorithmically. So, that the last thing I wanted to mention was that, for instance, there are questions that you can answer with this MPS models. For instance, suppose you have data for how streets look like any day of the week at any time. And so you say there's a jam in street 1, 2, 3, and so on. And now, for instance, you can answer questions such as like, what's the probability that today is Monday and there's a traffic jam in some particular street? And so for that, you need marginals, which you can compute with an MPS, and more complex tasks in general, which are basically impossible with other popular models. So I think this is a very exciting kind of like landscape, the type of problems that we could tackle with this models. Overall, I'm very excited about this. And with that, I'd like to finish.
Okay, thank you, Juan. We are a bit late already, so let's continue with Roman.
Okay, so
Juan,
see if I can share the slides. Here, okay, well, first of all, thanks a lot to the organizers for thinking about me for this round table, no? And for this discussion session. It's great to see virtually so many friends. I have to admit that, that's good. So let's see, this is not intended to be a formal talk at all. These are just some slides that I prepared kind of informally in order to trigger discussion on the topic of tensor networks and quantum computing. So as you know, the field of quantum computation is leaving, lots of advances, especially when it comes to experiments and to the actual processors that are being developed. You know that there are lots of advances in superconducting quantum computing, but also on ion traps, neutral atoms, photonic quantum computing as well, and so on, and the AVI as well. What can we do with tensor networks here? As far as I've seen, there are three kind of main fields of research at the intersection of quantum computing and tensor network algorithms. The first one is, of course, to build simulators of quantum computers. We can use tensor network algorithms to simulate the dynamics while, you know, the actual evolution of a quantum circuit. The second one is to use tensor network algorithms, your favorite algorithm, to benchmark what quantum computers are actually doing, because we need some tool to benchmark at least these small processors that people are nowadays producing. And the third one, which is the one that I particularly find more exciting, is building new hybrid algorithms, quantum and classical, okay? But where the classical part is actually a tensor network algorithm. So this is, of course, still a field of research. And as far as I know, there are lots of open questions here. So well, this is intended to be a discussion. So happy to discuss. These are just some examples. So here I'm just flashing some papers that one can find. This is by no means exhaustive, okay? So please don't get angry if you don't see your reference here, but this is just, as I said, to start discussing. Concerning the simulation of quantum computers with tensor networks, I think the first paper was by Giffre back quite a few years on the simulation of quantum computers with matrix protostates states. This is actually an algorithm, TEBD, no? This is actually an algorithm that I've seen that people implement very often when it comes to, you know, building simulators of quantum computers using tensor networks, because it's kind of a very natural thing to do, no? On the other hand, additionally to this, I've seen also people trying to simulate quantum computers using other tensor network structures, such as, for instance, PEPs. And of course, here the limit is your imagination. So you can just, you know, throw your favorite tensor network and try to simulate the dynamics of the quantum computer with whichever tensor network that you think that is more or better suited. But as you see, you know, the simulation with PEPs is from 2019. It's just last year. So people were a little bit afraid of using PEPs algorithms to simulate, you know, just the quantum computer. There are other strategies. You know, once you have the quantum circuit, as such, you can understand it as a quantum, as a tensor network itself. And then there are some types of quantum circuits that can actually be simulated efficiently with, you know, with tensor network contractions, say, for instance, using three tensor networks and so on. So this is what I want to just clarify also with this slide and with this paper. And of course, people, there are quite a few tensor network simulators of quantum computers out there. Here is an example by the Google friends, okay, QFlex. You can actually find a GitHub repository for this simulator, all right? Well, as far as I understand, it is very efficient. Here is another one, which uses QIMP. It's a library for tensor network manipulations that is implemented. You know, I learned about this recently, but I think it's very interesting. This is an alternative. You know, I mean, the X people and the Google people, they also have a very efficient tensor network library in Python, which I like a lot. In this one, you know, there is a specific subset of libraries for simulating quantum circuits. And as far as I understand, what they do is essentially matrix plot states. Okay. Apart from universal quantum computers, such as the ones that people at IBM, Google, Rigetti, you know, and so on are trying to build, people have also considered simulating quantum annealers, such as a machine that is being built by D-Wave. You know, this is a machine that essentially is implementing quantum annealing, which is kind of an imperfect version of adiabatic quantum computing, and the machine is only built with one purpose, which is to minimize a cost function, all right? Now, the guys at D-Wave, at least until 1 month ago or so, they had a processor, the D-Wave 2000X, that had very noisy qubits, well, many quite noisy qubits, let's say, around 2000 or so, and they were connecting according to a graph. They call it the Chimera graph, which is this, it's similar to this lattice here for a 4 times 4 times 8. Four times four times eight. Now you can see immediately that this looks very familiar. I mean, it looks very much like a two-dimensional structure. And the natural thing to do here is, well, maybe we could simulate this with a project entangled pair state. And that's exactly what they did in this paper. I have to say that I've seen also other references by, I remember some poster by some Japanese people, but I don't remember their names. Where they also simulated quantum annealer using PEPs. And as far as I understood, they were able to simulate it with a lot of accuracy, at least for the machine that D-Wave had until 1 month ago. I'm saying that because they just released a new processor. They call it Advantage with 5,000 and something qubits. They increased the connectivity a lot. They changed the topology of the lattice. Now there is much more connectivity. It resembles much more like a there are more clicks and fully connected subgraphs in the lattice. They have lower noise and so on. And as far as I know, nobody still simulated that topology, but the previous topology, this Chimera graph, you know, people attack that with PEPs, and it's actually possible to build a, you know, a simulator of quantum annealer with tensor networks. Now, when it comes to hybrid algorithms, here, the natural strategy is to go to variational quantum algorithms, which are it's a heuristic model of quantum computing where you have a quantum circuit that depends on a set of parameters. And then what you do is essentially you run your circuit and you have to optimize the parameters in the circuit to minimize some cost function. Now, this cost function that you are minimizing could be the expectation value of the energy of a Hamiltonian, and then you will have like a variational quantum algorithm for you know, approximating ground states, or it could be a cost function for, I don't know, for building a classifier, okay? And then you'll have a variational quantum classifier. This is a very generic model of quantum machine learning algorithms, and it's actually being quite successful nowadays. So, I mean, if you heard about the variational quantum eigensolver, the quantum approximate optimization algorithm, also, you know, variational quantum classifiers with or without data reuploading and all that, all these, at the end of the day, traces back to, you know, this type of variational quantum circuits. Now, in this setting, there are very interesting things to do with tensor networks. And as far as I know, this is an open field of research. So for instance, people have proposed variational quantum circuits that learn the coefficients of a tensor network. This was done by this paper by Russian friends. But there are other options. You can use also tensor, you know, you can implement tensor network structures in the variational quantum circuit itself. And this is a very, very interesting paper where they actually did that. They understood a way of, you know, recycling the qubits in variational quantum eigensolvers, which is one of these algorithms for optimizing, you know, for approximating ground states of Hamiltonians. And you know, they just realized that the sequential that the sequence of measurements that they were doing and so on, what they were generating was a matrix Brocket state. Here I'm just quoting some sentences from the paper. The nice thing about this approach is that they were able to produce, of course, a matrix Brocket state. And one would say, well, you know, we can simulate this with a classical computer, so what's the use? No. What's interesting here is that they can do matrix Brocket states for very large bond dimension, which is exactly the thing that is hard to implement, right? So in principle, that's possible to build with a quantum computer. And they also had some proposals on how to build you know, quantum circuits that had entanglement structure of a PEPS in a two-dimensional system. Now, in my opinion, this is just the beginning. This paper is very recent. I think there are still many other ideas that could be explore, such as, for instance, how to optimize the actual variational parameters of the circuit, or maybe use these quantum algorithms to optimize tensors in a tensor network algorithm, or things like this. It's an open field of research, and I think it's going to be very exciting in the future. Yeah, and yeah, that's all the slides that I had prepared. And as I said, this is intended to trigger discussion. And thank you.
Thank you, Oman. Before we come to the discussion and question session, we still have Simone. Oman, can you unshare?
Yeah, 1 second. Voila.
Yes, so good afternoon and good evening, everybody. Again, and here are my slides, actually my a single slide that I have, so I will be very quick and probably so sparing some time so we can go back. Also because I've been asked to speak 5 minutes on lattice gauge theory simulations of high dimensional quantum systems, so I will not kind of review again the field as this has already been done by Ignacio on Wednesday evening in the discussion when he already recalled the seminal paper on lattice gauge theory simulation on tensor network for one-dimensional systems by back. The first one was made by Sugihara and co-workers. And later on, followed by some work by Luca, where they already simulate some pure gauge lattice gauge theory. So what I will briefly want to recall is kind of summarizing a sketch of the tools that now we have available for attacking such a challenging problem, and also where I think there are the challenges from now on. So you see, I think that what we have available now are essentially 3 big classes of tools. And one, of course, are the algorithms. Some of them we have seen this week. Some others are available for, you know, since a lot of time, starting from PEPS and time evolution methods like TVDP that I'm sure will be, I mean, play a major role in advance algorithm, TDN algorithm for lattice gauge theory simulations. We have discrete and continuous versions, of course, of MPS and MERA that will play a role. And this afternoon, I have also introduced some hybrid solutions that we are now currently exploring. So I don't think that we will have a solution to fit all problems. So we will have to keep on exploring and advancing all these directions because clearly by going, you know, depending on the specific problem we are attacking, one of these algorithms will sit better. Then, of course, we have, you know, to all the part that comes from the theory, which has to be, you know, handled with care and integrated with the TN language and algorithm. So in particular, we are facing now the non-abelian lattice gauge theory. There are ideas, there are examples. And in initial simulations, but there are also a lot of open questions, in particular when it comes to the truncation of non-abelian lattice gauge theory and how to recover the continuum limit or the infinite limit of a gauge field. So there is a lot of work to be done, and also there are issues with fermionic matter. Again, there are a very powerful fermionic version of tensor network algorithms that are known, are there, are available, but still taking all this has to be explored and further developed in many different cases. Finally, there is a third dimension that is fundamental, which is the numerical part of that. So if we want to really go towards computing or predicting numbers as the community of lattice QCD has done in the last decades, we really need also to explore and develop our codes and numerics to the maximum, exploiting all available algorithm, hardware, and parallelization, which is yet another task to be developed and attacked. And I think that these three directions have been studied and attacked already for many times independently. And we can keep on doing that for more time. But the real challenge, I think, is in the middle. So whenever it's really that to achieve the final goal, we will have to merge the state of the art of these three fields to, for example, develop going to corner that has to be explored and contains a lot of interesting physics and prediction power, which are very, very challenging to achieve from a theoretical and the technical point of view. So if we have seen that we can probably now tackle, we can tackle two-dimensional and three-dimensional lattice gauge theory, but what about a time-dependent version of such a system? Or getting the continuum limit, the correct limits of those simulations is still a challenge ahead of us. And I think that my time is finished now, so I will stop here and leave the floor for the questions.
Okay, thank you, Simona, for being so much in time. The organizers have collected some questions from you for the panelists, and we will go in the same order as before. So the questions are quite related, so I will ask them both, and then you might have already answered some aspects of these questions in your talk, so then you can comment on that. So Juan, what are the prospects of using tensor networks in machine learning? You mentioned some examples. More specifically, what are the prospects for overcoming limitations of conventional Monte Carlo simulations using machine learning also in comparison with tensor networks?
Okay, so for first question, I think,
you have to unmute yourself, okay. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I think I'm muted myself, but I'm not sure. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so for the first question, I think there's a lot of interesting questions. As I was mentioning, there's already examples of algorithms that already beat traditional machine learning. And I think so. My perspective here about whether we can use tensor networks is the following, right? Like, it's mostly that people in machine learning focuses on, say, beating the state of the art and so on. I think for tensor networks, I think what we should do, or what I feel is a good idea, is that we should just exploit what's powerful about the tensor networks, which is the algorithmic flexibility, right? Like, so kind of like investigate different tasks that are important, even in very practical scenarios, such as like, for instance, the example that I was trying to explain at the end, even though I didn't have a lot of details, which is kind of like, can we say, for instance, compute marginals of these distributions and many other complicated tasks. And I think given the like superb algorithmic flexibility of say matrix product states and TEPs, so I think focusing on those tasks is what we should be doing basically. And then the other question was about simulating lattice gauge theory with machine learning methods, right?
Yeah, but you know, what's the advantage compared to Monte Carlo?
Right. So I think so far, compared to Monte Carlo, there's not been a lot of work, and this is relatively new area. I've seen two or three papers, and basically so far, like the simulations that I've seen, they're basically to improve the convergence of the Monte Carlo simulation. So basically to accelerate lattice gauge theory simulations using machine learning models. So basically replacing the Monte Carlo sampling by a model that you can tractably sample and then trying to fit the model to the best of our knowledge. And so this produces really accurate models and faster the correlation. But I think there's no work in the direction of say, for instance, trying to say solve the sign problem that appears in this problem. So there's no work in this area so far, even though there may be some ideas floating around already in the community.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything coming from the audience?
Yeah, maybe I want to comment. So the main advantage at the moment I see from machine learning for lattice gauge theory is that the machine learning tool does not suffer from the autocorrelation problem of Markov chain Monte Carlo. And I think this can really provide in the end a huge advantage over Markov chain Monte Carlo methods. And there I see a real prospect for this approach.
Thank you, Khan. Any more comments, questions?
Yeah, I completely agree.
More comments, questions to Juan? Let's go to the questions to Roman. So we have a question, which is, what are the prospects of studying real-time dynamics with quantum computers? And the second question, which I think you partially answered already, how can tensor network techniques and quantum computations complement and support each other?
Okay, so let's see, let's go first for the first question about the prospects of real-time dynamics with quantum computers. Well, I have to say that it depends on the type of dynamics that you want to simulate. So for instance, if you want to do the dynamics of say, I don't know, a 1D Ising model and so on, this is of course easier than if you want to do some more complicated dynamics, right? I mean, I have to say that say in general, if you want to simulate the dynamics on a universal quantum computer right now for a generic system, in my opinion, but that's my opinion, I think that the error rate of quantum gates is still a limitation, okay? And therefore, that's the reason why we still cannot simulate in general very long-time dynamics also with a quantum computer. I mean, if you have ever played with the IBM quantum machine, you know that you cannot do too many gates because the error accumulates very fast. And moreover, whatever is local in your Hamiltonian, maybe on the processor is not local, and then you have to add even more gates, and there is a problem there that the circuit explodes, and then the error accumulates. No. On the other hand, I think that the prospects are good because processors are improving. Nevertheless, as I said, it depends on the type of system that you want to simulate. So for instance, with neutral atoms, there are these proposals for building quantum computers with Rydberg atoms. Okay, these are the guys from Pascal in France. And there it's very easy to simulate a system with Ising interactions and with long range interactions. Okay, and this is something that, you know, it's kind of the natural interaction for the system. And for this particular system, one can simulate, one could simulate, or they plan to simulate very long time dynamics. Okay, so So yeah, I will say that it depends on what you want to simulate. There are some models that are easier or are better tailored to the specifics of the hardware, such as this case. Now, in general, it's still a bit far. And that's, of course, you know, that would be interesting because that would be some type of proof of quantum advantage again, no? Yeah, and regarding the second question, which are, okay, what are the most interesting applications of, I think it was hybrid algorithms, no? Of tensor networks and quantum computers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I partially mentioned this. I think that these variational quantum algorithms have a lot of potential in terms of, you know, looking for potential intersections with tensor network algorithms. So far, the people didn't explore it too much, but I think that there is a lot of room to work there. Okay, so for instance, one could do things like, I don't know, instead of more complicated measurements using tensor network states on the quantum circuit, or generate you know, complex tensor network structures with very large bond dimension in some other way, and so on. So in my opinion, this is the most interesting line of research at this intersection at the moment.
Thank you, Roman. Any more comments or questions coming from anyone else from the audience? Or from the other panelists? Okay, I don't see that at the moment. If you have some, you can also use the chat. So let's, in the meantime, continue with Simone. So again, two questions about one about prospects for, what are the prospects for efficient higher dimensional tensor networks for lattice gauge series? And the second question is, we need a master plan from you towards the tensor network study of QCD. So what steps do we have to take and what improvement should we do? And which model should be studied in 1+1 and 2+1 dimensions? And what questions should be asked?
Okay, so.
Very long question.
It's a lot, much more than two questions. Actually, and I touched something already before, yeah. But yeah. Here I have a couple of slides. If you allow me to share again my screen. This is what you have already seen. So given that here it starts to be late in Europe, at least, so I have this slide for the first question. So what you're asking me is to give you the treasure map, okay? And I think that, but I think we are in a good shape, okay? So we are essentially here, we have landed with all our tools of tensor network algorithms, and but still we have a lot of, you know, efforts to be done. And as I was saying, we have to go non-abelian, but this is kind of easy. I think we know how to do that. Then we have to do continuous limits and all this stuff, which is still something that it can be done. Then if you want to go to, we have to do finite temperature, which for tensor network is an additional complication, of course, but again, it can be done. And finally, there is the very final effort that for real producing real numbers, we have to scale this thing up. So I think, we are reaching and arriving at the time where we need to combine efforts, maybe, you know, with some joint larger projects that shall coordinate the development of this treasure hunt to reach finally and possibly produce some real numbers for QCD. Okay, this is it's a kind of at least midterm project, which I think it's in sight. So we have landed it in the island. So it's possible. Okay, but there will be a lot of things to do, and connecting to also what Roman said, and you know, it is also very interesting along the path, because we can also serve as you know, we can move on the quantum advantage line. Okay, so if we can do that for lattice gauge theory and maybe also for other models, then It will be useful for benchmarking quantum computation and quantum simulation, and also to say, you know, to define when you really need all that, which is, I think, for 3D finite temperature complex model, not really clear by now. So this is an open question. I would not really know in general what are the resources. Going a little bit more, you know, serious and precise, what are the things to study, okay? I think that, of course, what we have to do meanwhile is to, you know, move and attack problems that cannot be attacked with Monte Carlo, of course, because that's where we can...
Simona? Is anyone?
I was saying that we have to go and study the problems where Monte Carlo, of course, cannot as a sign problem, so with complex actions. So, for example, scattering and quenches, as we have already started with toy models, so where we can learn some new physics. Studying the entanglement properties of these systems, so in scattering, in strings, and this is a completely new directions that we can explore, and of course finite density phase diagrams, right? This is completely out of reach. And meanwhile, I'm sure that learning how to do continuous limit and how to implement in tensor network algorithms and also in quantum computers and quantum simulator, because the idea is, I mean, the effort that you have to do is very, very similar, and how to simplify to the maximum the model, we will learn a lot of interesting physics that will be useful for all these combined fields. So, and I think that with that, I have.
Thank you, Simona, for the treasure map. Any questions from the audience? Comments? You want to add something?
Yeah, I want to add something, Bianca, because for me, in all the discussions, there's a theoretical aspect missing. And this theoretical aspect is the analysis of the lattice spacing effects in the Hamiltonian towards the continuum limit. And if you would find that in this Hamiltonian formulation, we have, let's say, linear effects in the lattice spacing, do we have a way to improve these Hamiltonians such that we can have a scaling with the square of the lattice spacing, which would bring us much, much faster to the continuum limit. And I think such a theoretical analysis should be done. It's really very important when we start to become serious with these calculations.
So that's like improved actions or perfect actions.
This would, in our language, this would be improved actions, and this would follow the semantic improvement program. So It would be extremely nice to have the analog of this in the Hamiltonian formulation. Uh-huh. It helped us tremendously in our lattice QCD simulations.
Uh-huh. More comments, questions? Also, the panelists can are invited to probe each other. Any bets you want to put out? Simone, when do we have the first 4D simulation of a non-abelian gauge theory with tensor networks?
Non-abelian 3D plus one, okay. let me think about it. We just finished the abelian, so sometime, but who knows? You know, these things can accelerate pretty quickly, so. So, and of course, but as I said, I think that at some point we will have to make a joint effort of all the expertise around. So We have this QT flag Quantera European project that started somehow in doing that, that is ending in next year. So this is also a call for ideas and possibilities. Because as Scarlett just said, there are open problems that has to be attacked with different expertise and with different know-how and knowledge. So the way to solve all of them, which is what we have to do, is to go together and attack the problem.
Yeah. Just a comment about that. Like, I think that's important. It worked well for the Simons collaboration for the many electron problem. I think they did a great job. And I think doing that for such a challenging problem would only make sense.
Any more comments, prospects you want to comment on, problems you want to see solved?
So I have a question about the simulations, lattice gauge theory. So is it the problem? So I'm not from this community, but is it the problem that you get a lot of different solutions with different techniques, or like what's the landscape?
No. This is, we only get different results if we are at a known vanishing value of the lattice spacing, okay? Because we use different discretizations of the fermions or the matter and the gauge fields that we are using. So we allow ourselves that we can get different results at known vanishing value of the lattice spacing, but in the continuum limit, we have to get the same results. This is what universality is dictating to us. And this is something that we have to prove, that we really get the same results for decay constants for masses if we go to the continuum limit. If you would not be frozen, would this be the answer?
And
I think Juan, now he's blinking. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. I heard everything. It's just, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's a Friday afternoon or Friday late, so I understand there's not much energy after a very exciting week. Let me point out that there is still a WEMO session where you can still meet your friends. You can also use the Slack channel and continue your questions and plan the big proposal to get money for whatever you are doing. Let me finally, since this is the last official event here, let me really thank the organizers. It's Lena, Mikhail, Karl, Stefan, Volker, and Suki. And I'm not sure whether they want to say something. Karl? Lena?
I just want to say that Bianca is one of the organizers, and I thank her too. And maybe
I was just sharing today, so I'm not, not an organizer. Okay. Any comment about the next conference?
Okay, if you want me to say something, I found this an extremely interesting workshop that we had for the whole week. We covered really a lot of aspects. I could see that holography and tensor networks are coming closer and closer together, and the overlap is really very large. I think we are starting to see overlaps between machine learning and tensor networks, which is also very nice, and overlap now with tensor networks and quantum computing. So I think this is really exciting to look into the future. And for me, this would mean that it cries for a successor. of this workshop. And I guess we have to discuss among ourselves where and when we can do this. But I think it would be really nice if we proceed with this line of workshops. It's already the third one, and I found it really an excellent one.
Okay, thank you. Let me finally also thank the speakers of the session, Simone, Juan, and Roman. And well, let's hope that we see each other again, and maybe even in real space, and enjoy your Friday evening or afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye.